talk to me about what you can expect when you show up at Whiting. What can you expect?
Sure. You show up to Whiting and you're coming from Knife 2. We do have a little bit of a wait here. I think it's most recently we're advertising, if you come from the Navy, it's about 5 or 6 months before you will start primary.
Wow.
That's just a little bit of a backlog we have in our T-6 Texan, which is the aircraft that we fly, production.
So you come, but that number ebbs and flows, right? So
sure.
2 years from now, it might be totally different.
There's a bit of an accordion effect when it comes to this production, right? And so sometimes it shrinks, sometimes it grows. This is sort of the phase that we're in right now.
This is Nick Fialka, the host of the Ready for Pushback podcast, talking with the Commodore Training Air Wing 5 at NAS Whiting Field. Colonel Fez Crockle, Anthony Fez Crockle, who we talked with last week for our Meet Your Tenant Command segment and learned all about what they do. And, you know, different commands are going to be of different sizes. I'm just telling you that, you know, what Training Wing 5 does at Whiting is kind of like this enormous thing. We could have talked for hours and not even finished. But that's something we're doing every Friday at 7:38 or 39, something like that. This morning, we're going to switch to NAS Pensacola, and we have the Commodore Training Air Wing 6 is going to be on with us. So be sure to check that out. But I thought this podcast gave a lot of additional details or elements about naval aviation that I found personally very interesting. I mean, I know I'm a little bit of a nerd on the subject, but since it's here and what happens here, I figured most of you would find this interesting as well. Talking about the student naval aviators.
Navy has started a program called SNA, or Student Naval Aviator Junior Officer Course. That course does many of the same things, gives them an introduction to aviation, it gives them some idea of what to expect in primary, and then also give some classes on overall professional development, what to expect in the fleet once they show up there.
So when you've got the downtime because the pipeline is full and they can't get them in to the training process at Whiting, but they've gone through their knife training at NAS Pensacola, then what do? Just let them sit around and do nothing? Or do you give them some preliminary and basic instruction that kind of helps transition them and keep them occupied? And, you know, occupied sailors make, you know, better end results, obviously. And also, you know, something that you've heard a lot, maybe you've heard about, is like, how willing or eager are the instructors to get you to quit? You know, like, are they trying to make it really hard? And my takeaway from this is that the short version is that in primary flight instruction, it's not that they're trying to make you quit, but if you are going to quit and not make it as a pilot, they want to find that out as quickly as possible. And it is very, very rigorous. So it's not the sort of thing where they're, you know, out to get you, but they are out to test you and identify the ones that are really going to do well. And if they can, by contrast, identify the ones that are not, or it's just not a right fit for you, well, we're going to find something else in the Navy for you to do.
You can quit aviation anytime you want.
It's never too late to quit.
We actually encourage folks, right, if their heart's not into it, we actually encourage them to quit early.
Yeah.
It will help their longer-term career implications, so they can sort of establish their reputation and build experience in a different job sector. And then also, frankly, and perhaps even selfishly, it reduces the burden of production on us. I mean, we spend a tremendous amount of the taxpayer dollars and internal resources with the planes, instructor pilots, or IPs to create students. And we just really hate to see somebody drop or quit right at the very end.
Right. You're wasting resources on them if that's what happens. And then they talked a little bit about some of these sort of, I don't know, interesting ceremonies. This was one I didn't know anything about, but the tie cutting ceremony after you get your first solo flight done.
You mentioned the solo, right? So you conduct your solo. And what we do in the maritime services and maybe Marine Corps Coast Guard, we have a really cool ceremony, and I'm sure you have some great stories about this as an IP, and I'm bringing back some memories, I'm sure, Nick, is the tie cutting.
Yeah, I have my ties right over here. I got all my ties.
There's an area here called ACES. It's basically a heritage room with a lot of really neat old photos and memorabilia from naval aviation. And the instructor pilot, or the student, will start out first. The student will tell a story about their instructor pilot, probably embellished. And then the instructor pilot will tell a story about the student. And then at the conclusion of that, the tie will be cut. And that's a very sort of symbolic thing. The student will come with a tie around his flight suit, and the instructor will cut the tie. And it symbolizes the students now ready to fly solo.
Interesting. And Aces is the kind of like the on-base bar, basically.
It's kind of a neat story historically. So, you know, pilots used to wear, you know, these long scarves, right? And the student would sit up front and the instructor would sit in the back. And when the instructor wanted to get the student's attention, they would yank on the scarf, right? And when the scarf was no longer needed to be yanked on because the student's experience level was good enough, then there was no more yanking on the scarf.
I love it.
So the scarf eventually changed to a tie. So the idea is the shorter you cut the tie, the better off the student. The longer you cut the tie, i.e. the more likelihood that you had to yank it still, the not so good was, you know, experience for the student.
I've got a lot of different length ties. That's all I'll say.
Now, John, you have a civilian aviation license, right?
Well, I'm almost there.
Okay.
Yes,
but they you do something similar.
Right. Well, on your first solo as a civilian pilot, they cut your shirt.
Oh, all right.
You do your first solo, they cut your shirt
okay.
and then pin it up on the board.
Interesting. All right. So that's a tradition that transcends military aviation mm-hmm. or something like it. 646 here on News Radio Pensacola. Again, that's Colonel Anthony Fez Crockle, the Commodore at Training Air Wing 5 at Whiting Field on the Ready for Pushback podcast. It's a podcast aimed at pilots and future pilots. People might be considering a career in the military, is my understanding of it, with Nick Fialka. John Scott, Traffic on the Fives. John?
That's right. It's brought to you by Discover. Discover wants everyone to feel special with live 24/7 customer service. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. The roadways are rolling smooth right now. I-110, I-10, all flowing smoothly, even in through East Milton is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, John. When I say words like BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, Genesis, Audi, Jaguar, Lexus, you think of good quality vehicles. You probably paid extra to get them if you have one. You might think you've got to pay extra to service them at the dealership, and that's all you really have as an option. And it's not all you have as an option. You can take it to Bobby Likas Auto Service right here on Davis Highway. They work on these vehicles all the time. You, by law, you don't have to go to the dealership. The law protects you from having to go to the dealership. You can go anywhere you want. And if it's time, if it's distance, if it's, you know, gas and the extra price of going to the dealership, these are all things you can avoid paying. Go to Bobby Likas Auto Service. They work on those cars. Domestic cars, you know, gas engines, diesel engines, Chevy, Ford, Lexus, you know, whatever it is, they work on it. And the philosophy there is that they want to see you a little bit more regularly than perhaps you would, you know, think of on your own. But the idea there is to prevent the big thing. Routine, scheduled, preventative maintenance keeps you from having the catastrophe that costs a lot and is super inconvenient to you. The philosophy is represented in their website name, carclinicservice.com, like a healthcare clinic for your car is the idea. Bobby Likas Auto Service right here on Davis Highway. Getting back to the podcast, because I just thought there were some really interesting notes in this podcast. One was that, and we talked about this with Fez last week, is that when they're at the very end of their training pipeline, they do a thing called cross-country flights, which kind of makes sense, even though you maybe wouldn't have thought of it, that, you know, the folks from Whiting would take off and fly to, you know, Dallas or Miami or D.C.
I do a lot of cross-countries here, and I'll tell you the T-6 is a very capable platform. I will do our cross-countries in 1,000 nautical miles in any given direction from Pensacola. That takes me as far west as Denver, as far north as Chicago and then New York, and covers all of Florida to include Key West, which is where I was at for Fantasy Fest a few weeks ago.
And in case you were wondering, they do have fun sometimes on these cross-country flights, not during the flying necessarily, but at the destination. They're events.
And in I'm sorry. I didn't know you were playing that. But in civilians, we have to do a cross-country flight also. That's over 3 hours away from your airport.
Oh, okay. So all right, so same thing, same
New
concept.
Orleans,
okay.
Got a burger, turned around and came back. But I wasn't as fast as the T-6s. Sorry.
I am taking students to great places.
What'd you go do last weekend? Tell them what you did last weekend.
So last weekend, I took a T-6. We landed at Tampa International. And that Friday night, we went to go see Zac Brown Band. Concert.
So I
planned the cross country around that concert. It was absolutely fantastic. Saturday, toured Ybor City and the riverfront.
Smoked some cigars.
Sunday, I went for a 10-mile run along the bay. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. It's pretty. I mean, look, if you're going to be, a pilot, you know, be a pilot and, you know, really find out what it's like to fly across all kinds of places and go different locations and have some fun and do some stuff. One of the other notes, and I thought this was interesting for those of you that have been following the, remember, they're in a changeover phase right now. They're changing from the very, very, very old Ranger, Jet Ranger helicopter to the new TH-73 Thrasher. We covered this extensively. That's why Leonardo Helicopters has built this extra space on the corner of Whiting Field for maintenance, repair, and overhaul, and that's being developed into a, you know, a hybrid military/civilian facility and, you know, backgate access and Don Salter Road and all of this stuff, okay? So this is kind of big stuff for what's going on at Whiting. How far along in the transition are they from the old to the new helicopters?
So we have 65 of these aircraft on station. Effectively is our halfway mark. We're buying 130 overall. We still have over 100 of the TH-57. That's the 206 Jet Ranger, the Bell 206 Jet Ranger. We still have over 100 of those here as well. And we're sundowning those probably about 2 to 3 a month. We should be completely out of the Bell Jet Ranger business in less than 2 years' time.
Okay, so 2 to 3 a month are going away, and in about 2 years, they're going to be completely transitioned over. And you might wonder, I think it's a natural thing to wonder, what's going to happen to all those old Bell Jet Rangers?
What are they doing with the old helicopters?
So, believe it or not, some of them are going to NASA. Some of them are going to our partners and allies. So Uruguay has already registered interest in buying a lot of these. Sorry, not a whole bunch, but like a number of them. Some of them are going to end up on sticks in front of
my house,
restaurants and museums and lighting fields. And then
I'm bringing my trailer when I come down in a couple weeks. My wife is going to be not happy.
And then, you know, and a lot of them, geez, you'll probably be shaving with some of them in 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meaning they'll be scrap metal. They'll be razor blades. Last piece of this, and only because we're kind of in this process of talking about all of these tenant commands and what happens here locally. Like I said, I just found that the podcast was fascinating. We never got to talk about this with Fez last week, but one of the new innovations is they're creating a side pipeline for training helicopter pilots where they don't, my understanding is they don't go through primary flight instruction on the North Field at Whiting, but they go into a thing called Copter, which is run by private training entities.
I would say that it's probably the most innovative change to the way naval aviation training for helicopters is being conducted in the last 40 years, probably since we transitioned from the Huey 40 years ago. So we are now taking volunteers for a program called Copter. Copter stands for Contractor Operated Pilot Training Rotary.
Okay.
And that's modeled after an Air Force program that they used to train they're 90 pilots a year. Now, by contrast, we are training 470 Navy, Marine, Coast Guard, and allied and partner student naval aviators on any given year.
Hey, I love the idea that the Navy's innovating on the basis of what other services have already tried successfully.
Will be more. So the program is done by Helicopter Institute. You had Randy Rowles on one of your former podcasts.
That's right. So they're going out to Texas.
They're going out to Fort Worth. They're flying with Randy and his team out of Meacham Field there. And it's 50 hours. It's 40 hours of this familiarization contact work, 10 hours of instrument training. And then at the conclusion of that 3-month program, they will come to South Field and enter directly, bypassing T6s and primary, enter directly into the advanced syllabus program. They'll fly for 112 hours and they'll leave here with a total of 162 hours of exclusively helicopter time. This, I assure you, will make for a better helicopter pilot. They'll have more reps and sets doing auto rotations, copter only instrument approaches. They will be more proficient.
And, of course, there's multiple parts there. One is that it makes them more flexible in terms of the pipeline for using the helicopter training, you know, the south half of the field. It also means that they're going to get more direct instruction and experience on rotors instead of spending so much time on fixed wing first and then going to rotors. Makes sense to me as an alternative, as a different way of developing helicopter pilots, which, you know, Fez wouldn't be doing it if he didn't think that it was going to make better pilots in the end.